we will get there, and I'm sure there'll be compliance and regulations that will be put around AI that, that helps us feel more comfortable and safe with what it's doing. But I think we're not yet there yet, and I think we need to just keep our powder dry for the moment. Let's see what's happening, see where we can skirt around the edge of AI and what different technologies we can utilize within the AI space and that will help us, rather than going down the full scale AI, I guess, driven implementation.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. On today's Tech Talks, I am joined by Andrew Harrington. He's the CIO at Rype, who are a lifestyle insurance, or tech insurance business rather. And joining me today is someone who probably needed insurance recently because she ran the Ibiza Marathon, is Amber Harrison.
Hello. Yes, I did. And I actually got some for the first time in a really long time.
What, some insurance?
Yeah, yes, some insurance. I don't know why, and it sounds awful. I usually go away and I don't get insurance.
I mean, to be honest, I was in Rio with work 2 weeks ago, and my mother-in-law asked me if I had insurance, and I just went, yeah, through work. I have no idea, but I just didn't want to have a conversation with her where she was about to tell me off.
No, I don't blame you. I kind of do the same. I think it's just because I go away on like a lot of little like weekend trips, and I don't know. I just find if I get insurance every single time I go away, it's going to cost me an arm and a leg. But
you can't get insurance through, I was going to say through a bank, but obviously we're going to hear from Rype, but you know, through a provider that covers you over a period of time for multiple trips.
Yes, I imagine so. I think, in fact, I can definitely do that. I know I can, but yeah, I just haven't. And it's really bad, actually. But this trip, like I say, I think because I was running and I was conscious of the heat and I hadn't been too well anyway. So I thought, right, I really need to get insurance. And obviously it's not like super expensive anyway. So yeah, I need to not do that for the next trip, basically, not just sort of just kind of put it to one side and not get it done. So yeah, but it was very hot, not like here, but it was very, very hot. So it was, I'm glad I had it just as a bit of a safety net in a sense.
I bet. How did you get on?
Okay. Not too bad. I mean, I was pleased to finish it. It was under 5 hours, just under 5 hours. But yeah, it was so hilly and it was just incredibly hot. And I think obviously it's so hard to prepare for those kind of conditions in the UK because it's not hot. Not especially not like training through winter and stuff. So so I was pleased to get round. It was a really enjoyable experience, and I want to do it again just to go back and sort of give it another crack, really. But it was, yeah, I was a bit blown away by just how hot and how hilly it was.
It sounds like you needed lifestyle insurance, and it sounds like today's interview is something that you probably should have listened to about a month ago.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, putting me at the start of this interview talking about it, saying that I've never really get it, is a terrible idea. But yeah, I think I actually probably will stay on and have a listen to this one as well, just to, just because I think I need the advice.
Well, look, there we go. We're going to hand over to Andrew. We're going to talk about how technologies impact insurance. Here's the interview. We'll be back afterwards. So today I'm joined by Andrew Harrington. Andrew, you're the CIO at Rype. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Very good to meet you.
And you. And you're based up in Manchester, right?
We are, yes. We're based just on the south side of Manchester near the airport. Yeah, it's quite sunny today. Very nice.
Very good. Very good. My wife's from Salford, so I always poke fun at her to say that it doesn't ever really get sunny in Manchester. And then she tells me that it never really gets warm in Newcastle. A bit of a cross-Pennine rivalry between the two.
That's very good.
Look, it's lovely of you to take some time to join us today. As I said, CIO at Rype. Tell us, who are Rype?
So Rype, okay, yes, interesting. So we're one of the UK's leading scaled insurtech businesses. And so here at Rype, we've got a real fresh approach to insurance. And I think with the technology we've built from the ground up, we offer a very hyper-tailored product and hyper-tailored policies to our consumers across our leisure and lifestyle and small business product range. So we've grown over the last 20-odd years to nearly 350,000 customers. And that's primarily been enabled by our proprietary platform that we've developed here, which is called Juice. And I'll talk a bit more about that later on. And we launched that in 2019. And so the microservices and the API-based technologies that we use within that platform really helps us to deploy new products at pace. And I think for us at Ripe, that's what really makes us sort of different. And I think that enables us to scale at pace, really, and sort of produce and introduce new products and price changes in real time when we want to do it. So that's really one of the USPs that we sort of pride ourselves on.
And you see that USP as something, as you said there, that you pride yourself on. In terms of your customers, I'd assume that they are looking to react and respond to a market that is moving ever quicker. I mean, we've been saying that that technology changes pace quicker than ever for the last 3 or 4 years, and yet it continues to just seem to get quicker, right? So it is a continual problem to stay ahead of that curve.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's a really interesting question, really, because it's one that we think about quite regularly, and we look into sort of all the different ways and techniques that we feel that we can sort of leverage tech and our processes and our people to really sort of bring forward how we change that journey and how we sort of get ahead of the curve. So I think really looking into that, it's the big talking points. Obviously, we look at AI and we look at automation, and we look at machine learning and all those kind of things. And so we spent quite a lot of time looking into how we can sort of develop those technologies. So what we've developed is what we call our sort of innovation lab. And that's where we sort of harness some of that technology and really look into what areas of our business we feel is going to make the biggest difference for adding that sort of technology. I mean, AI is obviously a massive hot topic that everyone's talking about at the moment. But it's interesting, actually, when you look at it and when you actually dig into the detail, there's not very many large businesses out there that are actually harnessing the power of AI at scale at the moment. So it's one of those things that was harnessed to be, you know, an amazing, great, revolutionary change for our business. And I'm sure it will be over time. But interestingly, at the moment, I think what we're seeing is a lot of people potentially waiting for that first mover, waiting for that sort of big business to make a fairly significant use case and a case study that can really demonstrate the capabilities of AI. So it's really interesting. Everyone's sort of tenterhooks at the moment. But we've certainly looked to adopt that, certainly when we look at the way that the user journey pans out for the customers. Now, our main driver is to optimize our user journey so that it's as slick and as clean as possible, so that customers can get from A to B as quick as they possibly can, get the price, buy the product. The way we do that is we utilize some technology around the AI space that enables us to sort of, I guess, drive into more detail what the customer's actually trying to do and what the customer's actually trying to buy. Some of the technology we've used is what where we which falls quite neatly into the AI stack is something to do with looking at personalized experiences. And I think the thing that we say that customers are most giving us feedback on, they don't want to be bogged down with answering questions if we can derive those answers in a slightly different way. So we've used a sort of web builder capability that sits behind the platform that enables us to, in real time, adapt and change that user journey based on the feedback we get. And the feedback we get is based on our biosciences and neurosciences case studies that we use to sort of understand a little bit about how customers are using the journey, where their eyes are most focused, what they're most interested on when they're on that journey. And so we use an awful lot of that information to help us shape and structure what that model should look like. Mm. And I think that again is quite an interesting piece in terms of what we're trying to do.
Just to row back a couple of minutes to a comment that you made, because you said people are waiting to see that large scale deployment to demonstrate the capabilities of AI. I think that's quite interesting, because it's the second time in a few days I've heard someone say, you know, we need to see a real user case to show what AI can deliver. Is part of the problem that with generative AI, we've almost been told what's, you know, the art of possible before it's been put into production? It's not like a new tool that we're beginning to go, oh, this could be used to do X. It's almost like we arrived at X and then everyone's having to work out how to get there. And that's I suppose it's a slightly different challenge to previous innovations and new tools coming out.
Absolutely. And I think it's been overhyped to a certain degree, because If we roll the clock back, say, sort of, I guess, 10 years, and we start to think a little bit about how RPA was being brought to the forefront of, you know, again, the next greatest thing that's going to really sort of revolutionise efficiencies of the operation. And actually, if you look at where people are today from an RPA point of view, again, sort of, it's roughly around 10% of large organisations are actually using RPA in earnest and actually using it at scale. And I wonder if... Again, this is going to be one of those things that it's probably more, AI is going to be more akin to some of the larger organizations that can deliver some of these things at scale and are prepared to take some of those risks in that space. But I think time will tell. And I think there's a lot of things to be proved out with AI. There's a lot of confidence that needs to be built up around AI. But we will get there. And I'm sure there'll be compliance and regulations that will be put around AI that helps us feel more comfortable and safe with what it's doing. But I think we're not there yet. And I think we need to just keep our powder dry for the moment. And let's see what's happening. See where we can skirt around the edge of AI and what different technologies we can utilize within the AI space and that will help us rather than going down the full scale AI, I guess, driven implementation. So I think we just need to be slightly cautious at this stage, shall we say.
I think many in the C-suite listening would agree. And, you know, keeping the powder dry, waiting to see what happens comes down the line in terms of regulation, very important points. Is that understood in the boardroom, where I suppose the opportunity to almost print money, it would seem, for some organisations might be a real temptation to say, no, let's push ahead and not fall behind competition?
Yeah, good point. I mean, it definitely comes up as a topic of conversation, certainly at the board and certainly in some of the board sessions I've had. The main thrust of the conversation, I guess, really is around, so, but what is it that AI can do for us? Where does it add the value for our business? And I feel a lot of businesses are potentially falling foul of that trick of, let's just get AI into our estate so that we can then say we are ahead of the curve, we are using the latest tech. If it's not adding value to your business, then why would you use it? So I think that business case has got to be drawn out first. I think those case studies have got to be seen, and therefore we can really justify why we would deliver AI. Because in this case, it's not just about keeping up with the Joneses. It's got to have a purpose. It's got to have a value and a deliverable that really helps you and your business. And at the end of the day, it's got to help your customers to service themselves properly and, you know, get the products they want.
Mm. Now, one of the points that I suppose is being made as AI being a real differentiator, and I suppose in terms of keeping customers happy, is around the idea that it can be hyper-personalized, that we can really make sure that it's something that speaks to customers in a way that I suppose brands have never been able to in quite so much detail. What do you think's going on at the moment with regards to that, and what do you think we might see as changes from a consumer perspective?
Yeah, I think from a customer perspective, I think customers are bored with the same old insurance products you see online, and it's a set of questions that you've got to answer. You've got to get your price, and then you buy the product, away you go. Now, many of our customers are very busy people. They have different things going on in their lives. A lot of the different products we sell are across different personal lines and across different business lines, and I think different people enact on the website in certain different times. So given that change in behavior and that slightly dynamic approach that our customers are looking for, we really feel that changing that sort of journey and making it as bespoke and as personalized as possible has really got to be the way forwards. I mean, for us, it's about unpacking the product in its entirety, putting it out there for the customers, and you can pick and choose what you want. If you want a Mini, you can buy a Mini. If you want a Rolls Royce, you can buy a Rolls Royce. But it's giving them all of that flexibility and that optionality to be able to choose exactly what you want. I think the second thing off the back of that is being able to design a journey that can dynamically change as you're going through that journey, so that if you've answered certain questions in a certain way, you don't need to see all the other questions potentially that we might be offering up. So it's being smart and it's being dynamic in how we offer the questions that we want our customers to answer to get to that final price. So I think that's where we can be really smart in terms of what that journey looks like. We've started to use some machine learning capability to understand and track what our consumer needs are, and therefore providing exactly the right journey and service for each individual. Now, that's quite a big statement, but we're now starting to see some of that come to fore. And we're now starting to see customers starting to appreciate that journey in a much better way than potentially we did before we implemented some of this technology. So it's really, really exciting. It's really interesting to sort of create that journey that's really, really personalized for people. I think some of the things we've also looked at as well is, as I say, some of the biometrics and the sort of the eye tracking technology that's out there at the moment. So with that, we're able to test each one of the products we have on our websites. We're able to track and I guess, respond to where we see eye tracking having the most impact or having the least impact, and changing that web journey so that it focuses the attention of our customers in a really, really focused way. So the two things together give us a very, very slick and a very personalized approach that we know it works for our customers, depending on which product they're looking at.
From a CIO perspective then, and in terms of the investment in technology to make this work, you talked at the very top of the interview about, you know, your proprietary data. That takes a lot of computational power, a lot of storage. You know, you look at companies like Nvidia and their valuation and how they're perceived because of the fact that they've got the hardware to make all of this stuff work. And you have mentioned in writing that your tech stack is key to building bespoke personalized policies. Is there that understanding that really, you know, actually it's a little bit of investment in boxes and in hardware that's needed right now to make this stuff work? And it's not just necessarily the magic kind of software on top that's going to unlock value for you as an organization.
Yeah, I think if I was to be honest, I think the software is the thing that's the secret sauce. I think the hardware that sits behind it is very consumable. I mean, we use AWS as our platform for that, which is incredibly scalable. We can spin up hardware and services as and when we want. We can spin them down as we want as well. You have full flexibility in that hardware stack with AWS. But it's the software, I think, is the magic and the parts that I think are making it, I guess, more dynamic for us as a business. So I would argue against the fact that hardware is king in this. I don't think it necessarily is. It's an enabler of the software product itself. Yeah. Obviously, you need to scale it in an appropriate way to ensure that you're getting the best out of it. But ultimately, it's the software that's doing what you need it to do.
I suppose I was kind of nudging around where CIOs might be looking at kind of the key investments being as the year kind of, as we go through this year and where that money, when it comes to technology is being spent.
Well, I think the headline items, I suspect, from a CIO point of view, and certainly in my space, is looking at cloud computing is always the number one from a cost point of view that your biggest part of your budget goes to. I think next down the line is obviously security, and so that has to play a major part. But we see more and more, I think, nowadays, CIOs looking to look at third parties for that sort of support rather than having that more in-house. And then I think what you often see with some larger businesses out there, they've got an awful lot of legacy technology, which they're probably having to invest an enormous amount of money to move off onto new technology. I mean, we're already there. So for us, that's a real game changer as well. We're ahead of the curve in that space. We don't have legacy tech here. And so I know for a fact that when you look at some case studies from other larger organizations, they are crippled by legacy frameworks, legacy tech that they just can't seem to get off. And that just hinders your ability to develop and to innovate. So again, puts us in a pretty decent space in terms of our ability to leapfrog others and I guess develop our tech capability.
And just in terms of your products, I mean, how important, I mean, obviously it is important, but how important is it in terms of appealing to, you know, Gen Z, millennials, people who are buying houses, making big purchases, whatever it might be, you know, they're going to be holding, you know, policies. They're probably looking at some of the traditional services and options out there as being a little bit clunky and a bit arcane. In terms of making those accessible, making them sleek, how crucial is that? How crucial is that to kind of attracting investment? What is the, I suppose, as I've said, it is important, but can it be overstated just how important it is?
It's massive. It really is massive. And I think how your shop front looks and how you sell yourself and how you promote your business online there's never been more important time in history, really, to make sure that that's absolutely at the best it can possibly be. Not only is it all about price, but it's all about your journey, your ability to get to that price. And we know that looking at sort of case studies with other websites in the same sort of area as us, our ability to get to that price is by far quicker than any other competitors we see on this space as well. And I think that is what's most important to people. I don't have time. I just want to get on there. I want to answer as many questions as I can, as quickly as I possibly can, to get the price so that I can buy it and move on. And it's, for us, it's getting to that point with as least clicks as possible. So again, as I say, if we can streamline that journey, and if we can make it as slick as possible by using the biometrics that we've done and use some of the robotics and behavioral science around it, we can really hone in on where the focus of attention is from a consumer point of view. And again, most people are just interested in getting through the journey and getting to the end. Let's make that as quickly as possibly can. And I think that's the key selling point for us.
So let's finish here. One question that you have for your peer community in the C-suite, the CTO, the CIO at other organisations, and one thing that you think your peers should be aware of as we move through the year.
Oh, very interesting. What should CIOs be thinking about? I guess it's trying to stay one step ahead and ensuring that your customer experience is at the forefront of whatever you're trying to deliver. Mm-hmm. Operational efficiency is fantastic, and that should be a part of any IT department and CIO's DNA. But I think moving ahead, making sure your customer experience is optimized, because at the end of the day, those are the people that pay your wages, right? So that's the area that you need to focus your attention on, and ensuring that adds the value to the business.
And the question that you have?
The question that I have, why have you not implemented large-scale AI programs at scale yet?
Well, look, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure to speak. It's a fascinating area. As we said, it's moving so incredibly fast that it's always good to get an extra perspective. And I hope that Rype continues to go from strength to strength.
Many thank you. Many thanks. It's been fantastic speaking to you. Thanks for that.
Amber, throughout the course of the interview, Andrew talks a lot about AI. Are you sick of talking about AI, or is it still a conversation that you're actually quite enjoying having with candidates and clients?
Do you want me to be honest, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think some of the conversations I'm having, I think everyone's almost like in a bit of a... Everyone's in kind of a little bit in no man's land. Like, they don't know what's coming next. So we're having like a lot of like repeat conversations because... Nobody can sort of predict exactly what's coming. Everyone's obviously got their ideas around it and their opinions around it as well, which are completely valid. But I think it's just trying to understand sort of what's next, what the future looks like with it. So, yeah, I still enjoy the conversations, but I think I'm looking forward to sort of the next thing to come with it and the next kind of, the next sort of evolution or movement around it, however you want to sort of frame it. But, yeah, so the conversations will change ever so slightly.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating that Andrew says, you know, to echo your points, regulation will come, but we're not there yet. And at the time being, we need just to play around the edges rather than full-blown AI implementation. And that sentiment is borne out in the data that we collect through the Digital Leadership Report. This is going to be a little bit of a plug, because on the 24th of May, we are doing a live stream of a film that we have made exploring exactly these issues. And we have spoken to regulators writing AI policy. And I don't think companies can afford to wait for regulation, because what they're expecting to come isn't going to arrive.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. Yeah, like you said, sort of actually hearing from the people who are involved in the regulation will be good. It'll just sort of put, it'll actually sort of give people a bit of an idea of like what is expected, rather than like, say, there's lots and lots of speculation out there at the moment. But
yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm intrigued sort of to know exactly what they sort of come back with and what they say.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we're hoping that people tune in and join us. We will put a link in the show notes of this episode. But yeah, we hear, amongst other people, from Ott Velsberg, who is the Estonian government chief data officer. So we'll get a little bit of an inkling about where the EU policy is going, but I think it will surprise many.
Oh, okay, interesting. Oh, you left it on a bit of a cliffhanger there, Dave, as well.
Well, you know, we've got to try and tempt people into watching these pieces of content that we've made.
Yes, exactly. No, oh, okay. I'm intrigued. I'm very intrigued.
Look, Amber, thank you very much for your time today. Well done on the marathon.
Oh, thank you.
Get insurance next time.
I know. This is, a life lesson, so I will be getting insurance.
Yeah, look, I'm speaking to myself as much as I'm speaking to you. And anyway, we'll be back on Monday. Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.